Howdy, folks. This is Lynn, K5AVJ. And the last name is Bailey. Could be a cousin to Richard. It's definitely not a kissing cousin, though. And you're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack.
Well, hello, everybody, coming to you from the basement of the International Bigfoot Tipping Institute here in, oh my gosh, Wisconsin. This is KB5JBV, and you're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. Let me introduce the host of our program. Off in the far north end of the studio building, in Studio 1 North, Russ, K5TUX. Say hello to everybody, Russ.
Hello, everybody. Live from Studio 1N, deep in the Pine Forest between the peaks of North Central Arkansas. This is Russ, K5TUX. And let me introduce our co-host for the evening, who is our special friend, our beloved show notes creator, and just a guy who's in the background doing a bang-up job, Bill, K-A-9-W-K-A. You know him, you love him. Take a bow, Bill.
Good evening, Russ. Good evening, Richard. Thanks for letting me be on again.
No problem. Thank you for taking the time to be with us tonight.
Since I guess we're must be in Studio 1 Extreme North then, huh? Being north of Chicago.
Yep, you're in Studio 1 W, which is just north of, oh my gosh, Wisconsin, where I once bought some cheese. Okay, so we're gonna shoulder Bill with most of the responsibility for this episode. So all hate mail should go to KA9WKA@LHSpodcast.info. We'll get that out.
Does
right
that
in
even
the front.
Work?
No, but that's okay.
Okay, good.
I would like to make a point. I would like to interject at this particular junction that Bill is joining us tonight, courtesy of Bill K9WKAisAwesome.com. Bill, K9WKAisAwesome.com. We'd like to thank the folks over there for letting us borrow Bill for this evening. You guys go ahead.
No, I think I'm about done, and I'm sure Bill wants to collect his thoughts before we basically give him the episode. So go ahead and bring us in, Richard.
Oh, well, thought collection. Thought collection is always wonderful. All right, it's been a bang-up week around here. We ain't done a shooting, beeping, nothing. Uh-huh, almost said it. In fact, for those of y'all listening, I'm sure this will get cut out, that we've been screwing around for the last 45 minutes trying to figure out what to bring y'all this time. But that's okay. That's okay, because we got Bill. Bill's going to talk to us about Dayton, because Russ was stuck in the hall the whole time because Cheryl Jones, who incidentally joins us thanks to CherylJones.com. Y'all go over and check it out. Had him wrapped up in the hall the whole time he was there. There were little kids running around, something called 4 days in May. We really need somebody to come explain that to us, because Russ was there and didn't see none of it. But that's okay. Bill was there. Bill saw it all. He knows everything that happened out there.
Wow, I put an end to that in a hurry.
Sorry, I got distracted.
Okay. It's
a case of bad English.
I wish I had some bad English I could play.
And it's probably good that Richard didn't go, because Richard, well, everybody knows Richard ain't right.
Well, that's very true.
So what we're going to do tonight is Bill going to talk to us a little bit about Dayton. Russ going to talk to us a little bit about Dayton. I think Russ has got some audio. He may or may not have it. I don't know. Let's put him on the spot. Bill may have some audio. I don't know if he does or doesn't, but that's okay, because Bill, you need to go check out Bill's site over at Bill, K9WKAisAwesome.com. You need to go on over and check it out. to see what he's got going over there and everything else. Now, when you can't access the website, make sure that when you can't access the website that you send Bill a tacky email. Send Bill a tacky email. Don't send it to me or us because we're not the webmasters. Send those emails to billiscrabby@gmail.com. billiscrabby@gmail.com. Okay.
Okay, so there's some guy in Modesto, California.
No, I didn't get to go to Dayton.
There's some guy in Modesto, California who's going to get a ton of email after this episode.
All right, so you two guys made it to Dayton. I didn't make it because I got family issues. Hell, I had family issues before we started. Who wants to start off? Who was there most often? Who was there the longest? Who had the most fun?
Well, I think I was there the longest, but I'm willing to bet that Bill had the most fun.
Well, there you go. So what's up, Bill? How was Dayton?
Dayton was terrific. We had a great time. I went with a friend of mine, and we had a blast walking around the place and looking at all the stuff and generally just absorbing that extravaganza that is Dayton. Even ran into Russ and Cheryl at the booth. That was terrific. It wasn't the best location, I guess, but they were always busy, which I think is a good thing. Otherwise, the place was crowded. I heard not long ago that they had something in excess of 19,000 people show up, which is, I believe, a little higher attendance than they had over the last couple of years. So overall, a success, I guess, for all involved.
That's because they heard we were going to be there. That bumped the attendance up about 2,200 or so, I think.
I'm sure that's why.
Yeah, I'm sure that it was, too. And since we have no data one way or the other, then it is absolutely the truth, and you can't prove me wrong otherwise.
That's right.
Well, I did manage to get there and sit in the booth a lot, and we were really busy. And thanks to the guys at Ohio Linux Fest who brought about 100 Ubuntu CDs, we were able to give those out to folks who stopped by the booth, and we told everybody about Linux. We told everybody about the podcast. We got lots of people interested. And even though we were tucked away in the corner, and if anybody here has been to the Hera Arena before, you know how complicated that building is. And if you haven't and decide to go sometime, just remember how complicated that building is. So how many times did you get lost, Bill? And first of all, how many times have you been to Dayton before? Was this your first time, or are you a veteran?
Well, not quite a novice, but not quite a veteran either. This was my second tour. I was there 2 years ago, and that was my first time. And yes, the Hera Arena is a maze. I suspect it's three or four buildings that they just tied together over the years, because a lot of it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But that's part of the adventure, I guess. You're lost without one of the programs. And when we arrived Friday afternoon, I was dismayed to discover that they had run out of programs and weren't going to have any for several hours. So we kind of took our lives in our hands and wandered around without any assistance from maps or anything like that. And it was easy to get turned around and lost.
Well, I only saw a little bit of the exhibition, like I said, our little corner of the world, so to speak. And I didn't get lost too often. The biggest thing was making sure to know exactly where the bathrooms were and exactly how to get to them. That way you never had to worry about it. The only thing you had to worry about is the one that was closest to us also happened to be closest to the Yaesu booth, which always had at least 3,700 people around it. It was interesting trying to get through, you know, when necessary, when nature called, etc. But other than that, we had a good time.
And since Yaesu serves liquor to get people to come over to their booth, that was probably kind of busy.
No, they were trying to give away hats every now and then. They'd run out, and then another shipment would come in, and then there would be a mob of people lined up to get a free Yaesu hat.
I have to say that they have one of the most complicated and sophisticated setups I'd ever seen at any kind of a conference before. You have to understand that their setup and their equipment and the people that they had and the equipment they used just to bring the equipment in was probably 10 times more sophisticated than the building they had, you know, than the arena itself. I mean, they had like scissor lifts and forklifts, and their whole booth was about, you know, they had about 10 or 12 booths, I think, and everything was carpeted, and it looked like they could have been, you know, an Apple store, but for Yaesu.
Yes, it was quite the display. I remember from 2 years ago, too, they had just as sophisticated a display as they did this year. Kenwood didn't do too bad either. They looked pretty impressive with everything, and so did ICOM, I have to admit. They all did a fine job and had lots of stuff to look at and play with and talk about. I'm not sure if the folks that were manning all the booths were all that ham radio savvy, but they all did a fine job attracting spectators and interested parties in their new wares. I think they all had something new to display.
Yeah, I know there was a lot of talk about the different equipment that was coming out that was sort of new to the ham radio community that everybody was abuzz about. In some cases, I think in Kenwood's case, there was a radio that had come out that hadn't even been given a product ID yet that they were showing off. That's how new and cutting edge the things that they were bringing out were. I also want to say that there was one place, I can't remember who, but they had brought like 100 of their handy talkies and were gone within like, you know, seconds of them being there.
Was that Chinese outfit, I think, right? That had the affordable 2-meter handy talks, and I heard about it, I never saw them.
Yeah, they were selling them for like, you know, $89 or some, you know, ridiculous price for a handy talkie, and apparently they sold out like, you know, if it had been any faster, it would have created a small black hole inside the building.
Yeah, exactly.
That was one of the big things folks came back here talking about was this cheap handheld that they were, cheap Chinese handheld they were selling up there.
Yeah, apparently it was completely feature-packed and could do everything you could imagine a 2-meter handheld could do. And they were selling it at such a cheap price that it wasn't even clear how they were able to manufacture it for what they were selling it for. And like I said, they just sold out instantaneously. And I, of course, heard about it at the end of the show. So, you know, it didn't help me out any.
When Russ had finally sold enough stuff to be able to afford something, he couldn't go get what he wanted.
Yeah, the company, I think, was Wuxon. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Wuxon.
You do, and you'll get arrested.
Yeah.
Hey, Wuxon sounds good.
Hey, inexpensive Chinese labor, everybody should have some.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes. It's an interesting little radio. I'm sorry I missed seeing it in person.
Wuxon Radios, 2-meter handhelds, brought to you by CheapChineseLabor.com.
There you go. Also see their sister site, ToilingInTheFields.tv. ToilingInTheFields.tv.
Some of this is going to have to go.
See, I keep breaking y'all's rhythm. Y'all get going good, and I keep speaking up.
Okay, well, we've talked a little bit about Dayton, and I actually had some audio that I recorded. I wasn't able to do any interviews or anything like that because we were just too busy, but I recorded some soliloquies while I had some free time, and I guess what I'll do since we're talking about Dayton is I'll play those now, and hopefully they won't take too long, and when we come back, we'll chat with Bill and Richard some more about Dayton. We'll do a little music, and then we'll move on to something else. So here's a little taste of Dayton from Dayton itself. Hello, and welcome to Linux in the Ham Shack, broadcasting live to tape from the Dayton Hamvention, May 14th, 2010. It's currently about 11:30 in the morning, and we finally got totally set up here. Things started a little tough yesterday when we showed up later than we thought we were going to be because of the one-hour time difference we completely forgot about. We started to set up, and the folks from the convention came around to our booth and said, "You guys are going to be ready in 5 minutes to leave, right?" And we looked at our watches thinking we still had an hour to go, and of course we only had a couple of minutes. So we threw everything under the booth table, took off for the evening, found out that we didn't have any power cords or any of the other things we needed to set up with. So two trips to Walmart later, and we finally had all of our equipment, and we spent the first 2 hours of the Hamvention while dealing with people wandering around and asking us questions and all of that, trying to actually get the booth set up. So we finally got that done, and everything seems to be working pretty well. I finally got the audio equipment ready to go. The new mixer seems to be working quite well, and interest in our booth has been pretty good so far. We will be continuing to update you as things go on from the Hamvention, and look for updates on various podcasts in the future coming out of Dayton. We have many, many hours of coverage to go, and we'll let you know how things progress. Thanks to everybody that we've seen so far, and especially listeners of the program who have come by and said hello. So with that, I will sign off for now, and update in a few hours. Hello, this is Russ from Linux in the Ham Shack again. We are broadcasting live to tape from the Dayton Hamvention. Today is May 14th, 2010, and it is now 4:45 in the afternoon. We have had quite a day dealing with all of the people who have attended the Dayton Hamvention thus far. We've been told several times that the big day is tomorrow, Saturday, May 15th, and that today was just sort of an introductory course, and we should get ready for the flood gates to open come tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. So far, we have met many new friends of the show who say they're going to listen after the Dayton Hamvention is done. We have talked to many friends of the show. Bill, K9WKA, has come by. About a half an hour ago, we talked to the folks who do the Low SWR podcast, KD0BJT, that'd be Richard, and KD0BJS, Brady, and we had a nice conversation with them. Matt, KC8BEW, who is the one who started our intentions of going to Dayton, came by several times, and he is actually over at the ARRL booth, manning the situation over there for them, or at least partially so. So far at Dayton, I've done considerably more talking than I have at the Ohio Linux Fest. It seems that ham radio operators are a lot more interested in chatting than those who are interested in Linux and Linux alone. And at this point, at about an hour until the show is over, my voice has just about burned out, but I still have enough to get in a little bit of a report here. Along with me in the booth this year, we have Cheryl, who has been a longtime listener of the program and is also my significant other. She's been sitting here and experiencing Dayton along with everybody else, and she has a microphone in her hand and is going to give us her perceptions of Dayton for the first day so far.
Hi, this is Cheryl. I'm at the 2010 Dayton Hamvention. This is our first experience at Dayton. It's been an interesting experience, to say the least. The crowds this morning were fairly thick, but it's now calmed down quite a bit. And this is something that I think Linux and the Ham Shack has been a positive influence at. Several people have said that they are going to definitely check out the podcast, so that's cool. So, and I'm meeting lots of new people that I've seen in the chat room when the podcast has been recording. And this is just definitely a new experience for me. So I look forward to see what tomorrow's like, because they said it's going to be insane. So anyway, back to Russ.
All right. Thanks very much for that. And we will have a future update either a little bit later in the day here before we check out for the evening, or starting again first thing tomorrow morning. Saturday opens up at 9 a.m. and it's supposed to close down around 5 a.m., though what we learned from this morning is that people start showing up well before that, and if you want a parking space within 2 miles of the convention center, you better get here early, early, early. So if you're someone who's coming in for next year, just keep that in mind. So we will talk to you all in a little bit. Hello and good afternoon to everybody. This is Russ, K5TUX, broadcasting live on the second day of the Dayton Hamvention 2010. This is late in the afternoon. It is 4:30 p.m. And because everything was so busy today, and the fact that we had hundreds and hundreds of visitors to the booth, we have not had a chance to broadcast anything from the first time we got here this morning until now. Everything is finally clearing out just a little bit. We are watching some of the booths nearby us, and most of the people have deserted us for the afternoon. The Hera Arena in Dayton, Ohio will close at 5 p.m. today, and so far
We have had a lot of fun. We had Rob from the Ohio Linux Fest stop by and give us a bunch of Ubuntu 10.04 CDs to give away. They're promotional CDs that were put together by the Ohio Linux Fest. We happened to brand the cases with our own name to go along with the business cards that we have set up. And we started out with about 500 business cards yesterday morning, and we are down to what looks like about 40. We have 4 hours of the show to go tomorrow, so I'm not sure that we're actually going to have enough of these CDs and enough of these business cards that we have left to go around, but we will stretch them as far as we possibly can. Most of the people who have stopped by have had a little bit of interest in Linux and maybe have used it a time or two. Most of them hadn't used it in years or more. We were able to get several people interested in the program. I would say at least 100, maybe more. We had several visitors who already listened to the podcast. Many of the call signs that showed up were not people we recognized. We even had G3ZTB from Leeds in the United Kingdom come up, and we chatted with him both days, both yesterday and today, probably for 15 minutes each time. He's a very avid listener of the program, and we really appreciate having him come by and introducing himself and telling us all about how he uses Linux and his interest in the program. We have had such a good time here at the Dayton Hamvention. It's amazing to see all of the people who have come from all over the world. We've had several VK calls. We had a PY call. We had an I-8 call that I remember from yesterday. So there isn't a point on the globe that someone hasn't shown up at the show from. They all have either come here strictly for this, or they had something to do and were passing through Dayton on the way. That's what G3ZTB was doing. He had an appointment with some friends over in Boston, and he decided to go to Boston from the United Kingdom by way of Ohio. My voice is a little bit shot today, so I may sound a little bit strange. Plus, of course, there's a little bit of ambient noise in the room tonight, but we are just about to close down the booth for the evening. We have 4 hours to go on Sunday from 9 to 1, and we are looking forward to closing out the show and giving away the rest of our stuff and doing the promotion we've been doing, and I am sure we have garnered a lot more listeners to the program, and I hope that everybody who stopped by the booth recognizes that we really appreciate meeting and talking to everyone, and we hope everyone had a wonderful time here in Dayton. So I'm going to sign off for now. So thanks everybody who's a listener of the show and everybody new who we've met at Dayton, and we hope to have you listeners stick around with us for as long as we decide to do the show, which, all things being equal, will be a very long time indeed. For Richard, who couldn't make it, and for Cheryl, who's been my wonderful companion for the entire program, and for myself, Russ K5TUX, we will sign off from the Dayton Hamvention 2010. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, that's all the audio I managed to get recorded out at Dayton. Unfortunately, I would have liked to get some interviews and so on, but we were so busy talking with the people who were milling around and visiting our booth that we just didn't have time. We've got some voicemails from folks at Dayton who called in after the fact that we're going to play a little bit later in our feedback section. But right now we're going to jump back to Dayton to the part of the show that I didn't get to see any of, which was the outside vendor exhibits. And we're going to rely on Bill for this because I assume you actually got outside some. So what was that like?
Oh, it was great. There were lots and lots of tables set up and tents as far as you could see. I think there were more there than when I was there 2 years ago. At least it seemed that way to me. We spent the better part, I think, of an afternoon walking around, and I'm sure we didn't see everything. We kept getting lost, I think, and doubling back and then forgetting certain areas, but it was fun. I think I saw more radios out there for sale than I saw a couple years ago, and some nice looking equipment too, everything from relatively recent HF rigs to some of the antique stuff, tube stuff, you know, old Collins and Drake gear, that kind of thing. Hallicrafters, I seem to recall it. Everything was well represented, as well as the typical flea market stuff you see at almost any ham fest, but there was a lot more radio equipment, test gear, and that sort of thing. Even some guys selling various kits. Far Circuits was there and had a tent set up. I bought a circuit board for an ICOM CIB interface, computer interface, which I've assembled but haven't gotten working yet. One of these days I will get it to work. I can tell that it's almost there. It's just not quite right. So I don't know what exactly the problem is, but I'm going to get that sorted out pretty soon. What else comes to mind?
So is that the only thing you saw that you couldn't live without, or were there a few other things?
Oh, I bought a few other things, a couple of little books. I didn't buy anything particularly major. I had already kind of exceeded my radio budget for the year earlier in the year, so I had to restrain myself a little bit. I was hoping to see Heights Towers there, because I was seriously considering putting in a tower this year, but I'm going to postpone that, I think. But they were not there. One of the tower vendors, though, is called, I think it was Aluma Tower, and my buddy was very interested in their wares, and those nice folks spent a good 15, 20 minutes talking to us about it, and were very knowledgeable and helpful, as were all the vendors that we met and talked with. My buddy bought a 43-foot vertical antenna, HF antenna, from DX Engineering, and he's already got that up and running and is delighted with its performance. So we did all right.
Well, that's good. There were times when I felt like I would have loved to be able to walk around, and there were times where I felt overwhelmed by the whole thing and just being in our booth space, where I was kind of glad that I didn't have to. Next time I'll probably try and split it up a little bit, get out to see some of the event, and also promote the show and the open source philosophy and all the things that we were there to do originally. I would like to get out there and see, and hopefully by next May I will have a large chunk of change I can drop on something cool, but we'll see.
Oh,
how
yeah,
that
it's
works
always out. Fun if you can spend some money.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, with all that merchandise lying around, you got to buy something.
That's right. Well, and if I can help out, I'd be happy to. If you need somebody to man the booth for a couple hours, I wouldn't mind.
Oh, well, we definitely will take you up on that. I like the sound of that. And, of course, if Richard had showed up, then it wouldn't have been a problem. But
actually, I'm trying to find a woman to help me breed a small blonde child so I can sell them to come up that way next year. Hey, man, this close to the border, blonde-headed, blue-eyed children bring lots of money.
Okay, so you've heard it here, folks, that next year the booth will be in the care of a 9-month-old.
No, but I told you I was going to sell it.
Oh, I see. You're going to sell it for the plane fare? Is that the idea?
It's like you're in the room with me.
It's like I'm in the room with you.
We're on such the same wavelength. I was just thinking that I should do that.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
It scares me that I have a thought that concurs with anything you think.
And there you have it. I have my own process. But we digress. What's his name? Bill. Bill.
How quickly they forget.
There you go. Actually, this past weekend, 2 weekends ago, shortly after Dayton, I was talking to a guy that lives down here local on D-Star, and we were actually discussing HamCom, which was going on that weekend, which where Dayton's like the national convention for the league and all that good stuff. HamCom's the West Gulf Division convention, and it's probably the biggest operation I've ever been to myself. And he was talking about how it was sad and kind of small and all this other stuff. And yeah, it used to be a lot larger, the flea market area and that kind of stuff, but I've seen a drop in things down here. Has there been a drop in attendance as far as the flea market type stuff up there at Dayton? I know the big vendors are there. They're down here for our show too. But the flea markets have kind of dropped off as far as, HamCom's concerned anyway. How was it out at Dayton again?
I thought it was terrific. As I said earlier, I think it looked bigger to me this year than it was 2 years ago. I'm not sure if that is fact or just my poor recollection, but it certainly seemed like it was filled to near capacity out there in the parking lot. And there was lots of foot traffic, and the weather was very cooperative. It was gorgeous that weekend, so it was very amenable to everyone getting outside and visiting all the tables and whatnot that were set up out in the parking lot. It looked like it was well-intended, and people were buying stuff, so I think they did okay.
Well, good. Maybe that
says that the flea market part was huge. She actually wandered outside a couple of times because there was a food vendor just outside the main, or the back door, I should say. Uh-huh. And once you're out there, you kind of get a good overview of the flea market portion of the show in back of the arena, which is where most of everybody was. And I know we had to dodge all kinds of stuff when we drove in to unload our truck. And that was before that was the day before the show even opened. So I know there was a ton of stuff going on out there, but just didn't get a chance to see any of it.
And I know they weren't serving crustaceans out there, or Russ would have been in the Dayton Police Department holding cell. All right. Cheryl said Kenwood had a pretty good booth out there. Did either one of y'all stop at the Icon booth?
Not very long. I certainly walked past it several times. They were always quite busy with folks. It was in the main building, with which is where they usually are, I think, occupying most of a corner. And yeah, they were always mobbed several deep with folks interested in what they had on display. As I recall, one of the rigs they had there in prominent display was a camouflage rig, I think, that was supposed to be a mobile HF rig of some sort. It was fairly interesting.
Oh, that's so you can lose your radio in the woods.
I think so, yeah.
Well, you know, for all y'all listening, y'all don't get me wrong, I'm a diehard Kenwood fan myself. I started out on Kenwood radios. I love Kenwood radios. There's just been some strange and odd quirks of fate that ended me up with a Yaesu HF rig and ICOM mobile rigs. But, you know, you want to find those things out. What was the most interesting thing you ran across out there, Bill?
That's hard to put my finger on.
Stick him on the spot there, Richard.
Yeah, no kidding. I should have studied. One of the things that always fascinated me were the Bagali Morse code keys. He's an Italian fellow that's just a master machinist, and his Morse keys are works of art. I always enjoyed looking at those, and not really even desiring one so much because my Morse skills are so poor, but I'd never be able to use one to its advantage. But they are just lovely to look at and see in person. I quite enjoyed that. There is a tower company whose name is escaping me. I want to say it's something like Lumo or something like that. That's probably wrong. I'll look it up and get it right for the show notes. But they had an enormous tower there in the hall. Not, of course, standing up and extended, but just laying there on its side was quite impressive to see. The thing was enormous. So there was a little bit of everything from kits to fully assembled rigs to die for. Ellicraft was doing a good job. They were always busy. I liked looking at their stuff. Those are the ones that come to mind first.
Well, there you go. I mean, I imagine just about everybody that has anything to do with amateur radio in any way, shape, form, or fashion is out of Dayton, and that's probably why it takes a couple of days to see it all. You know, down here in Texas, we don't do things as big as we might want to assume. Well, Russ, did you ever get out of the booth long enough to find something that was the most exciting thing you ran across?
No, unfortunately, I really didn't. I didn't get out to any of the exhibition at all. I walked by several things, but I never got a chance to even stop and look.
Well, Russ was busy networking. He's a social butterfly.
That's right. I'm something like that. I'm very Kafka-esque. And somehow I think that if someone psychoanalyzes the comment I just made, they're going to think really bad things about me. But I didn't get a chance to look at anything. I really didn't.
Psycho. Psycho is an active word here at Linux in the Ham Shack. Yes, Psycho, brought to you by www.psycho.info. www.psycho.info. Psychoanalysis, psycho whatever, and stuff.
And a little Norman Bates.
Oh, I see. The slave labor in the chat room says that you had her chained to a post behind the table. Let me see if I got all this. Chained to a post behind the table, and you were charging people $1 to flog her. Is that correct?
He charged me $2.
Ah.
That's because we had to watch your stuff while you were out at the exhibition.
It helps to have friends in high places. Yeah.
Well, see, that's interesting. That's something I wanted to ask about, too. What kind of, Cheryl says y'all were really busy at the booth. What was going on at the booth? I mean, more than what you've already expanded upon.
Well, I know you had several fans stop by and say hello, and you also had folks that never heard of us before stop by and ask what it was all about. So even though the location could have been better, I think you were doing all right.
Yeah, we did really well, actually. It was pretty much nonstop traffic. I mean, when there was a lull, it was never more than a minute or two, and we always had someone to talk about. And, you know, back in the audio that we played a little while ago, you can hear that I pretty much had no voice by the end of it, because we just did nothing but talk about Linux and open source and give out those CDs from OLF and just promote the heck out of everything. And I know by the time Sunday night and Monday morning rolled around, I didn't want to do any more talking. And that's pretty much all we did. But we did a lot of it.
Wow. Now, see, y'all going to make me all misty and stuff.
Okay, one thing I want to do is probably wrap this up and take a break. We will play some music. And on the other side, we do have a little bit more of Dayton we want to get to. The first is we have a voicemail from a visitor to our booth that we want to play and address, because he has a very good question, and we want to let everybody know the answer to that question. We want to thank everybody who stopped by the Dayton Hamvention and stopped by our booth. You all made it worth it. And thank everybody again for the donations that we received that got us there. I mean, that was the most important thing. All of our listeners were really helpful and, what's the word I'm looking for, really charitable. Thank you for sending us out to Dayton and letting us have a good time and promote the show and all that. And everybody who gave us money was up on our banner. There are some pictures of the booth floating around on Flickr and Facebook and various other places. So if you search for us, you'll find them, and maybe you'll see your name out there. But we're going to take a little musical break, and I heard Bill's mic pop like he might want to say something.
I wanted, while I'm thinking of it, to mention that my friend is a amateur videographer, and I know he took some video of you while we were there, and I've got to bug him the next time I see him to see if he's got that ready. I was going to ship that off to you.
Okay, that would be great. If you can find out where that is or have him send it to me and we'll get it posted somewhere so people can look at it, that would be a wonderful thing. I don't remember being videotaped at any point, but like I said, there was a lot going on, so I don't really remember half of what was happening anyway.
Kind of depends on whether Dayton's in a dry or wet county.
From what I saw, Dayton was in a wet county.
Well, there you have it.
But anyway, we're going to take a little break here, and when we come back, we've got a voicemail to do from Dayton, and we are going to have our Dayton drawing. I know it's a little later than we said it was going to be, but we're going to give away a couple of Linux in the Ham Shack hats, a couple of Linux in the Ham Shack t-shirts, and the grand prize of an Olenko DJ-175T 2-meter handy talkie. So we'll do that on the other side of the music.
Y'all come back to Linux in the Hat Shack. Okay, and we are back. Russ is picking that fabulous, fabulous music again. I don't know where he gets it all, but at least I don't have to pick it. So, what we got now, Russ?
We'd be listening to the blues if you picked it.
Not necessarily. Or I could do some of that throat singing thing like they were doing on Big Bang Theory the other night.
All right. Hey, throat singing's kind of cool if you're doing it right.
Can you do it wrong?
I don't know, because I don't know enough about it, I guess.
Sounded like a rat that had found himself locked up in the X-Lax factory overnight.
I hope everybody realizes that.
Oh, boy.
Bill just disparaged every throat singer in the universe, so.
Send all the hate mail to me.
K9WKA at LHSpodcast.in. You heard it here first. Well, I've got a voicemail. I've got a voicemail. You know, trying to keep our train from derailing just yet.
I'm just wondering if you got a shot for that.
Yeah. I've got a voicemail from a visitor to our booth at the Dayton Hamvention, and I'm going to play it right now, and then we're going to talk about it. So here it is.
Hi, the name is Hal Mandry, and at the Dayton Hamvention, I picked up a Ubuntu, I guess is how you pronounce it, disc that a gentleman had there. And I'm new, totally new to Linux, but I'm wanting to play with it. I'd like to know how to install that to a flash drive, like thumb drive. I've played around with it a little bit. I don't seem to be able to figure it out here. So thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
I'm going to go through the quick and dirty way of installing on a USB thumb drive from a Linux machine, because he had the CD that we gave him of Ubuntu 10.04. So we're going to do it the easy way. Here's the easy way. Gentleman's name was Hal, by the way. So Hal, here's the easy way. You put in that live CD and you start it up in live CD mode, in the try it mode. When it boots up, you stick your thumb drive in a USB port on your computer. When you do that, you log in, which I believe it does automatically in the trial mode, but you get logged in, and in your taskbar up at the top, you click on System, and you go down to Administration, and you select Startup Disk Creator. When the Startup Disk Creator comes up, it will show your disk to use as your USB thumb drive, and you'll have a source disk image or CD. So you'll have to click the Other button, and you'll have to select your CD-ROM drive, which will probably be listed as /dev/SR1, more than likely. It might be /dev/SCD0 or /dev/SR0, but more than likely it's going to be the only one you see. You then go ahead and click on Erase Disk under Disks to Use. That will erase your thumb drive and make it suitable for booting up once you get this thing installed. And then down at the bottom right, you click on Make Startup Disk. If I remember right, on a typical USB thumb drive, takes less than 5 minutes to copy all the files and set up the bootloader and all that kind of stuff. And then you just plug your disk in, your USB thumb drive, reboot your computer, and it should boot. Now, you may have to tweak your BIOS a little bit if it's a slightly older computer to tell it that you want USB drives to be able to boot the system. And you may have to tweak your hard disk settings to put your thumb drive above your internal hard drive in priority. But once you do that, it should boot off the thumb drive and should run just normally. And that's like the easiest way to do it from that demo CD that you received at the Dayton Hamvention. If you have any further questions or you need a specific bit of instruction on any part of those steps, just go ahead and email us at info@lhspodcast.info, and we'll see what we can do about getting you a specific walkthrough for any problems you're having. So that's about it for me. Anybody else got any comments about that?
Well, that sounds pretty straightforward, and that's very good. However, he might even try going out, even if he's got a Windows machine, and taking a look at UNet booting. UNET booting. And that would allow him to get that installed over onto the drive. Don't shake your head at me.
I'm trying to make this easy for him.
Well, the other way is stick the disk in and hit install.
Yeah, that's great if he wants to, you know, dual boot, if he has space to dual boot, or if he wants to wipe out his existing partition, which is most likely Windows. But we don't want him to do that.
He don't need no Windows anyway.
But if he does do that, hate mail goes to kb5jbv@gmail.com.
No, k9wka.org.
No, we won't saddle Bill with that one.
Please remember, when you're trying to install them to a thumb drive, a lot of times it may look like you're doing something wrong, but there are some thumb drives that you're not able to set up to boot, so you might want to check into that also. And there is a website out there that lists some of the ones that are compatible as opposed to the ones that aren't. So make sure before you purchase thumb drive, you research them a little bit before you go to attempt to do that. And now I'm finished running my head. Say something, Bill.
Well, and the other piece of the puzzle is a BIOS that is capable of booting from a USB drive. Not all of them will. I've got some older hardware here that they have USB ports, but they haven't a clue how to boot from them.
Yeah, and I would like to add, I did mention that about, you know, switching your BIOS settings if it doesn't happen to read the USB thumb drive by default. And in some instances, I've seen where in the boot order, you have to select an external device or a USB device or something like that. But I had trouble with that at Southeast Linux Fest with an Asus EEE PC that I was using, because I set it to boot from external drives and it still wouldn't boot from the thumb drive. So I
mine will, but you have to bang on the escape key as the splash screen first starts when you power it on, or it won't look for it.
Now, see, I had to go one step further than that. I had to change two things in the BIOS. One was to allow for external boot devices, which actually didn't matter because the Asus EEE PCs that I've got have an external device built in. They have an SD card slot.
Right.
And when you say external device, that's what it thinks. However, if you have a USB drive installed on the thing, it shows up in the BIOS as a hard drive. So what you have to do is go into the hard drive boot order and put the USB hard drive first.
Okay.
So that it sees that first and tries to boot from it first before it goes to the internal hard drive. So you may have to tweak around with your BIOS a little bit, but it can be made to work. And like I said, Hal, if you have a specific issue, just go ahead and email us, and we will try and work through it for you. But otherwise, it's a pretty straightforward thing to install on a thumb drive these days. I mean, it's particularly with netbooks and smaller devices, that's one of the ways that booting is usually done these days, because computers typically don't have CD-ROM drives or DVD-ROM drives.
Well, I was also looking while y'all were talking a while ago. There's quite a few websites out there that are concerned with the issue of making bootable thumb drives, and that's what we're boiling down to here, is getting that Linux on there and getting it to boot. So you may want to try some of these. I guess you were handing out Ubuntu out there. Is that what you were handing out?
We were handing out Ubuntu 10.04, the Lucid Lynx version, the very latest Ubuntu, yep. Just the desktop version, and I think it was the i386 version. I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, and that's the whole deal. In fact, over at Ubuntu, there's a page that gives some instructions and guidelines. But once again, I want to make sure I warn you, and I've run into this myself because I've tried a couple of times to move some versions over to a thumb drive and make it bootable. You need to make sure that you have one that can be made to boot, because some of them won't. Doggone, I don't even know what these are around here. They're the inexpensive ones. However, if you go look in the community documentation over at Ubuntu, and that's a good place to start since you're using that distro, and they have a pretty extensive little install tutorial with links off to other places and stuff like that. It may give you all the information you need to get it onto that thumb drive and get it working.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps that up several times over.
I believe that dead horse is pulverized.
Definitely could get it through a meat grinder easy now. Okay, so the last thing we're going to do about the Dayton Hamvention is do our little raffle drawing that should have been done several weeks ago, but it's going to be done right now on the air.
And, raffles with ridges.
That's right. Raffles have ridges.
There you
and
go.
And they have badgers. Anyway, I've got here all of the raffle entries that we got, and I think even Bill's in here. So cross your fingers, Bill, because you could win a radio. So we're going to start off with the caps. We got two caps to give away. So I'm going to reach in here, and I'm shuffling around in the bag. You can probably hear it a little bit. I'm sure it's breaking the squelch, so to speak, on my noise gate.
I can see it.
It was just a good Foley effect.
Oh, I'm that good, yeah.
I can see it.
You can see it?
Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. Here's, hopefully these all have call signs on them. I think we weeded out the ones that didn't qualify. So here we go. For the first cap, Linux in the Ham Shack, which we will, of course, mail to you. We have the call sign looks like, oh boy, this is one of those ones where I don't know. It looks like Kilo Charlie 9 Oscar Lima India, KC9OLI. So congratulations, KC9OLI, assuming that's what that really is. You just won a cap. So for the second one, let me go ahead and shake this up real good here. All right.
Our next winner is KB5JBV. KB5JBV.
I suppose I should have thrown an entry in just for you since you couldn't make it, but you had to be there.
No, I work for the show.
You work for the show? Well, that's right. You can't work for the show. Okay, so the second hat goes to Whiskey 8, Papa Juliet Whiskey. That's Paul W8PJW. So congratulations, Paul, on winning a cap. And thank you for visiting us at the Dayton Hamvention. I don't know if we talked to you or anything, but you certainly entered the contest, so. Okay, we got a t-shirt next. So let me go ahead and dig down in here and kind of shuffle around and see what we got next. Okay, first t-shirt goes to K9LNX. Yeah, I wonder if they're a Linux user. Kilo 9 Lima November X-Ray. Don't have a name on here, but I've got an email address. Of course, I'll look that up later. But anyway, congratulations, K9LNX. And hopefully you're now a listener to the show since you stopped by the booth. Okay, we got one more t-shirt to give away, then we've got the grand prize. Dig down in here, try and make this fair.
Chris has really come a long way over the last 2 years. He's lost all his bashful.
All my bashful?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the second t-shirt. Goes to Whiskey Delta 8 Echo, WD8E. So congratulations to you, and thank you for stopping by the booth at the Dayton Hamvention, and maybe we'll get to see you next year if we didn't happen to get a chance to talk to you this year. Okay, I'm going to shake this bag up really good because this is for the big one. This is for the radio. Want to make sure that everybody gets a chance at this. So the grand prize for this drawing was an Alenco DJ175T, which is a full 5-watt, 2-meter handy talkie.
Damn.
Sorry, Richard. See what you miss when you don't show up?
Damn.
Okay, and hopefully we won't pick Bill on this because everyone will think it's rigged, but let's see. Sorry, Bill.
No problem. I would think it was rigged, too, if I won.
Then I'll tell a story.
Okay, let's see what we got here. Okay, the winner is November 4, Kilo Mike Charlie, N4KMC. So congratulations on winning the radio, the DJ175T from Alenco. And thank you for stopping by the booth of the Dayton Hamvention and entering our drawing. And thanks to everybody who participated. Those are our winners. So we'll be sending out prizes shortly to everybody who won. Thanks again.
Now, see, it's funny Bill should say that, because when I was exiting office at the Ham Association of Mesquite the night we had the election and stuff, I couldn't run again because we only allowed 2 terms. And the election was over, and at the very end of the evening, we had a drawing on a raffle that had been going on for 8 months, because every time I tried to start a raffle around there, they decided that they wanted to try and spread out some $400 or $500 thing over a 50-member club, which needless to say, makes ticket sales sluggish. And I'll be doggone if I didn't win, because there were 20 tickets left, and I was tired of waiting on it, and I wanted it to be done before I left office permanently. So I bought the last 20 tickets, and I'll be doggone if I didn't win. That's how I got my first D-Star radio. Believe it or not. So there you go. All right.
Unfortunately, we couldn't afford anything like a D-Star radio to give away, but, you know, a 2-meter handy talkie is nothing to sneeze at, I guess.
Actually, to tell you the truth, a handy talkie is nothing to sneeze at. In fact, you guys, y'all go on over to rfpodcast.info and check out episode number 25. Okay, so I had to get that in. It'll probably be badger, 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 badger when it comes out, but that's okay. If you want to hear the real deal, check out the streaming. I'm sure it's somewhere, somehow, somewho. Yeehaw.
I think this badger thing is really going to take off, and the best part about it is I can use it for anything you say. It doesn't have to be, you know, a swear. I can just say, you know, I don't like what he's talking about, and your whole spiel is just going to be badger, 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 badger.
Sad part is he already cuts out my dramatic pauses.
Okay. Well, yeah, I kind of have to, though, because the show would be about 30 minutes longer if we didn't.
I'll fix y'all here.
I'm gonna even bleep out stuff that you don't say. I'm going to put badger in those dramatic pauses like you're just cussing at me.
Badger. Could be worse. I could be talking about beavers and squirrel covers and everything else, y'all. And that'll be badger, 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 badger.
Okay, well, I had big plans for this episode, like we were going to talk about the Southeast Linux Fest, but here's what we're going to do. We've got some more voicemails, and we've got some more feedback that we need to get to try and get this out of the way. So we're going to do that, and then what's going to happen is next episode, we're going to roll Southeast Linux Fest and Field Day into an episode. So we're going to talk about that next time. So right now, we're going to take another break, because for some reason, we are just going on and on and on. Hear that southern accent there, Richard?
I told you you've been spending too much time in the South.
Yeah, I'm doing it deliberately, just so you can think I'm becoming a southern boy or something.
Now you just have to master the phrase, all y'all.
All y'all? I say that all the time anyway.
No, all y'all.
All y'all?
One word.
All y'all, yeah.
Quickly.
Like stomach. Jeff Foxworthy says, y'all too?
Oh, don't even start on him. He ain't really from the South. He's from freaking Chicago.
He's from Georgia.
Chicago.
Whatever.
Badger.
Anyway, Richard's going to take us into another musical break. We're going to come back and do some feedback.
Badger, 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 badger.
They should have fought that fight till they got it right. Cold blood in the night. They should have fought that fight till they got it right. Cold blood in the night. They should have fought that fight till they got it right. Cold blood in the night. They should have fought that fight till they got it right. Cold blood in the night. Villages of Indians were living on the land. They only had a vision as to execute a plan. Loving and believing that a higher force reigned. Learning in their loyalty to compensate for pain. Sailing over oceans was the bringers of the end. Descendants of a government and nothing of a friend. In sickness and in poverty we crawl up on their shore. A weaker form of greeting cause they knew there would be more. The sad soon left as the bad things passed. We light the fire, we smoke and we burn. Cause even heaven won't help when a bad man yell on a post. They think by whipping he'll learn. Even you would have loathed this cantankerous drug. It puts a felony flow to your charm. Cause power and greed are a hateful obscene. And it's you who's got to sound the alarm. What the Indian minds had set. The land was getting crowded and the buffalo were dead. They told a wave of ignorance had swept over the land while hunting down the Indians and trading Africans. The moral of the stories, don't you tread on your friends. They're there in the beginning and they'll be there in the end. If something's there, don't take it cause you think it's up for grabs. Karma has a consequence and someone's keeping tabs.
We're back and we're making a run down towards the ends of it. Bill's in here. We're all excited. Russ is in here. Ted is like making snide remarks in the chat room and we're ready to go. So what else we got, Russ?
I think we're going to move on to feedback. And I know you've got at least one, so I'm going to let you do it first.
I thought we did feedback.
No, we didn't do feedback. I did one piece of feedback related to Dayton. We got other feedback.
Russ is being mean to me.
I'm being mean to you. That's right. I'm making you work.
Hell, who the hell do you think you are, my woman?
You wish.
You don't even look like a person. It's the hair, Russ. It's the hair. All righty. So the first one I got is from Randall. Randall, KC4WZE. You can visit Randall over at W4ZE.org. And Randall writes specifically to Russ. He doesn't even care about Richard because everybody wants to abuse me. I don't know why. However, it says, Russ, I know that you got Richard a noise gate. No, he didn't. The noise gate is thanks to one of our nice listeners. One of our nice listeners, James Gatwood. James was nice enough to send us an old noise gate that he wasn't using, and it is just absolutely kicking butt. Except in the case of where Randall is concerned, because he says, I know that you got Richard a noise gate, and I don't hear his heavy breathing anymore. But still, it still needs adjusting. I can still hear him rant and rave. Randall, KC4WZE. Ha ha ha, very funny. Everybody's always picking on Richard. That's okay, though, because one of these days, I'll be dead and you'll be sorry. Take it away, Russ.
I'm not touching that one. That was all about you.
It was addressed to you.
Yeah, it was addressed to me because he didn't want to get, you know, he didn't want to hear you rant and rave, but of course, we haven't tweaked your noise gate yet, so he's still going to hear it.
Well, you know, if I had a liquor store that was quick enough that I could drive there in 5 minutes and be back, you know, go out, slam the car door, drive out, be back about 5 minutes later. Yeah, we already did that story during the break. If y'all want to hear about it, y'all go to
the streaming
streaming feed, After Dark thing with small furry critters and all that good stuff.
That's right.
So let me run through these real quick and let's see if you got them. If you don't got them, you might got them. I don't know. We got a mention over at Linux Basement because as y'all know, not too long ago, Claudio, who is apparently going on over there and I haven't heard Linux Basement in a while because Chad was slacking off. So go on over and check episode 57 of Linux Basement. Apparently they were all hanging out in the bar again, just like last year over at HTTP. /linuxbasement.com. Now I did two and I got two more left, but they may work. I don't know. Take it away, Russ.
Well, I want to thank Claudio for talking about us in episode 57 of the Linux Basement, which I just listened to today. He talks very, very highly of Linux in the Ham Shack and his appearance on it in episode number 39. And he does a good job of stroking my ego. It was well worth the listen. So everybody go check out the Linux Basement. This is going to be a fun episode. I hope everybody listens to it.
It's going to be huge, hilarious.
It is. It is Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Because I don't want to plug Chad Wallenberg and Claudio Miranda. That would be Chad at LinuxBasement.com and Claudio at LinuxBasement.com over at LinuxBasement.com anymore.
Well, I would hate to talk about Chad Wallenberg and Claudio over there at Linux Basement at LinuxBasement.com because we really wouldn't want them to pick up that many more listeners. So whatever y'all do, forget that we said anything about LinuxBasement.com.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't want to drive too many people over to LinuxBasement.com because LinuxBasement.com is one of those things that we can't really vouch for. You know, there's some stuff over at LinuxBasement.com that might be a little unsettling for anyone under the age of 35.
Except for where Chad is concerned, because he's really helped me out from time to time with Drupal.
Yeah. So don't go to LinuxBasement.com or Linux what Basement is? Over at LinuxBasement.com, okay?
And our next Google alert showed up. When did this show up? I guess it showed up this evening. It has to do with Southeast Linux Fest 2010, building strong and lasting connections. Now, I haven't had a chance to read the whole article, but I do see that the whole phrase Linux in the Ham Shack is prominently displayed in the Google alert. So y'all go over to www.geardiary.com and check it out. Have you had a chance to go take a look at that one yet, Russ?
No, I have not. I'm not sure you even got that one.
Ah, well, I have to send you a link.
Yes, please do.
A link. I'll do it right now.
Here, I know a good link. LinuxBasement.com.
Send it to LinuxBasement.com.
Right. I have a Google alert here too, where we are listed on a blog by WA0UWH. Did you get that one?
No,
you didn't get that? Well, he's linked to us on his blog, and we are going to link back to him as soon as I get around to it, which will be very soon, I assure you. And that blog is at wa0uwh.blogspot.com. So thank you, wa0uwh, for being a listener to Linux in the Ham Shack. We really appreciate having you on board. And we also appreciate linuxbasement.com.
I hate Blogspot. It's very, very slow.
The internet is very, very slow. The internet is very slow.
No, Blogspot is very slow. And I don't see my call sign, so I'm angry.
Oh, Cheryl brought up that we need to mention the fact that we were mentioned at Network World Magazine.
Network World Magazine?
Yes. We weren't mentioned in the magazine, but there are bloggers for Network World over at, I believe, networkworld.com. And one of them is Steve Spector, and he is a blogger for Network World. And he was at Southeast Linux Fest, and he mentioned Linux in the Ham Shack because we spent a lot of time talking to him while we were down there. And he wrote us up into one of his blogs over at networkworld.com. So thanks very much, Steve. It was good to see you. Oh, and Steve is part of the Xen project, X-E-N, the Linux kernel-based virtual machine technology, Xen. So he was talking a lot about that and promoting it at Southeast Linux Fest. So,
not to be confused with Z-E-N, Zen, which means you have to shave your head off and put on a sheet.
Right, and wear a kilt.
Kilts and badgers.
Yes. I have this one that I can do real quick, unless you've got one.
Not sure. I'm flipping back and forth. Wait a minute. I got that big, long one.
Yeah, let me do this one first.
That I'm embarrassed about. Go ahead.
This one's from Don, WS4E, yet again. He sent us a comment on the website that says, "What happened to the archives on Ustream? It almost looks like only every other episode is available. Do you have control over what they keep?" And the answer is yes, I do have control over what they keep, but the real problem is I have no real control over the number of times that I actually record the episodes, because most of the time I forget. So it has nothing to do with Ustream. It has to do with the fact that I never pressed the record button, and therefore there are very few archives over at ustream.com or .tv. And in this case, I actually recorded the first segment of the episode tonight and forgot to record the last two. So you're going to get a third of the show.
Badger.
Yeah, sorry about that, but it's my bad. My fault entirely. Okay, what
that's
do you got?
That's okay. He got me one time this week over the other website, so he's equal opportunity.
Equal opportunity badger.
Si. Donde es el badger?
Yeah, lo siento, Don. Anyway, on to the next.
Let me get my book out. I don't know what you just said.
Oh, and the network world thing, back to Steven Spector, Cheryl has posted the link in the chat room. And for the benefit of Bill, who's going to put this in the show notes, the link is www.networkworld.com/community/node/62490.
Node.
Stroke. Badger. Anyway, go ahead.
Means he's using Drupal. Where were we? Oh, really long one.
Yes. Oh, and we got to mention again on AD7MI.com's blog, AD7MI. Thank you very much.
Wow, that sounds like a James Bond picture.
I'm trying to get through these.
Really? It does.
What, 87MI?
Yeah.
87MI.
Yeah.
Like Goldfinger and Octopussy. Octobadger.
Octobadger. All right.
Bill,
deteriorating fast.
Yeah, Bill has just completely gone away. He's not even turning his mic on anymore.
Bill, are you there?
I didn't want you to hear me typing.
Oh, okay.
Ah, clickety-clack takes us to the Outlaws.
That's right. I'm not fab, after all.
Clickety-clack, even though we get a click every time he turns it on and turns it off.
That's right. I can edit out the clicks. Go ahead. You have feedback. Do it.
We got another one from Randall. This is the same guy that is casting disparaging remarks about Noisegate, which I guess is okay. That's why we give it away. Yeah, if we were charging money for it, we wouldn't take his advice. Anyway, let's do something else. This one says, first, it labeled a question for each of you. First, a ham radio question for Richard. As I understand it, FSK, Frequency Shift King, is performed by shifting the RF frequency between two frequencies, excluding FSK 16, which is 16 frequencies. I believe that this is accomplished by the fact that when an AM carrier is mixed with an audio tone, there are three frequencies coming out of the mixer: the carrier, the sum, and the differences of the carrier and the audio tone. So, if I am on 28400 megahertz and I modulate the carrier with a 1000 hertz tone, I will get energy at 28400, 28.399, and 28.401. If we suppress carrier and the lower sideband, then I will only transmit energy on 28401. I could, in essence, send CW on 28401 by adding and removing the 1000 hertz tone going into the single sideband modulator. My question is, what are the tones or the frequency shift of FSK? If I were to use a 1000 hertz and 0 hertz, then power would only be transmitted on one frequency since the carrier is suppressed. If I used 1000 and 2000, I would use a 1000 hertz of bandwidth since I would have energy on either 28.401 or 28.402. If the show is too short, then go into an explanation of FSK 16. Well, since we have two fairly long paragraphs, let me respond to the first paragraph first. It's been a while since I've fooled with that particular aspect of the hobby, and I need to go back and study up. So instead of giving you a bad answer, I'm going to take some time to research it a little bit so I can give you a good answer. Unless, of course, you were just trying to make me look bad, like the Noisegate question earlier. Anyway, so now a question for Russ. So pay attention, Russ.
I'm paying attention.
I hear you talking about the relative sizes of one distro to another. And it sounds like you are talking about both core memory as well as DASD. Now, I guess that if every possible device driver were statically linked into the kernel, then it could get quite large, but I was under the impression that device drivers were dynamically loaded as needed. I am not new to Linux. I loaded my first Linux about 20 years ago when it would run on a 286 because most people didn't have a 386. I had to buy a SCSI card and drive so I could load it because most computers didn't have CD drives. And if they did, you needed to load operating system drivers to read from them. If you would explain what makes distros different and help me understand how to choose one, I would like something that is not too different from MS Windows, since that is where I spend my days, but I would like to like a full-featured GUI environment. I would like to play with some server functions like setting up a web server, DNS server, a router, a firewall, a DHCP server, email server, etc. So, do I get Mint for its GUI or Slackware for its server, or just get any of them and install what I need? Thank you for your efforts, both for these questions and the obvious effort you put into the podcast. KC4WZE. P.S. I also had a 5 call, KA5SKE, when I was a novice, but had to get a 4 call when I moved to Atlanta. When I became a ham, your show would have been TRS-80 in the ham shack, because the IBM PC had not been introduced. No, it wouldn't, because I'd have put my foot down and it'd been Commodore 64 in the ham shack. So there you go, Russ. Tackle your paragraph.
Unfortunately, this is a really complicated paragraph and it could take forever to address. However, I will try and do it succinctly. The first thing is, when we're talking about the relative sizes of one distribution to another, I'm specifically discussing the on-disk footprint of the distribution as it's installed from its install media. You can make any distribution as large or as small in on-disk footprint and memory footprint as you want by tweaking it to your heart's desire. However, most of the distributions that start out smaller on disk footprint also happen to have a smaller memory footprint. You know, Puppy, which installs in 100 megabytes, is going to have a smaller memory footprint than Ubuntu, which installs in 700 megabytes because there are fewer applications running, it uses a lighter weight desktop environment, and so on and so forth. So when it came to the discussion of which light distribution we were going to use, we were talking about distributions that require a smaller download, that use lightweight X environments, and which have both a smaller disk footprint and a smaller memory footprint. So hopefully that addresses that question. And then as far as the kernel is concerned, yes, most kernels come by default these days, broken down into modules which can be loaded dynamically into the running kernel. However, you don't have to have a kernel that works that way. You can use the kernel building tools to build a monolithic kernel, which only has the drivers you want in it, or has statically linked every driver in the system. So you can have a kernel that is gigantic, you can have a monolithic kernel that's tiny, or you can have a kernel that's moderately sized, wherein you can link modules on the fly whenever you need them. And all of that just depends on how you set your system up. Most of the installations by default, like Ubuntu and Mint and Fedora and so on and so forth, which use some variant of the 2.6 Linux kernel, all do it modular. They include a subset of well-known drivers that are likely to load any kind of disk device, memory device, basic peripherals, and so on that you might have in your system, but you may have to enable other devices on your own, or you may have to build external kernel modules to get some piece of hardware working or something else. Or you can eliminate the dynamic part of that entirely by statically linking all of the kernel modules that you know are necessary to run your system And then you can get rid of all the rest of the modules, and you can have a very streamlined kernel that doesn't require any dynamic linking whatsoever. That usually makes for a faster system. It also requires a lot of work. So it's just how you want to do it. So what makes distros different? By and large, it's the package manager that makes a distro different. First of all, whether the distribution has a package manager at all, which most of them do, but some distributions like Slackware and Gentoo suggest that you build most of your modules and your applications from source, whereas other distributions like Debian and Ubuntu and Red Hat and OpenSUSE have well-defined package managers that allow you to install everything in binary format without having to compile stuff. There are package managers for Gentoo and Slackware, and you can build stuff from source on Fedora, OpenSUSE, and Debian as well. So again, it's freedom of choice and what you want to do. So to answer your question, how do you want to set up a system? Well, basically, the whole idea is freedom. Freedom as in your choice to do whatever you want, and in most cases also freedom from cost. So if you want to take Ubuntu, there's a server version of that. If you want to use Slackware or Gentoo, those are basically designed as servers, but you can make any distribution a server, you can make any distribution a desktop. It's where you start from, where the distribution has elected to get its user base from, and how much work you want to put into it. If you want to make Slackware or Gentoo a desktop machine, it's going to take some effort. If you want to make Ubuntu a server machine, it's going to take a little effort. If you want to do what the distributions were designed to do when they were put out and give you the applications they give you on your install media, things are going to be easier. Your life is going to be easier. So it's just a matter of how you want to do it. Pick the thing you like the best and make it as monolithic, as dynamic, and as suits you as you please. And there's my treatise on Linux as a versatile solution for your computing needs. Finn.
I don't use Linux myself. I use this thing called Badger OS.
Ta-da.
We've wore the Badger out, have we not?
We have.
All right.
Yep. The Badger has plumb died. You know where we're going to move to from here?
Badger.
Yes. The end of the show. We're done.
No, I have one more.
You better make it quick. We've gone a long time.
Okay, well, this one's also from Randall, KC4WZE. It just came in about 20 minutes ago. And it says, I was yanking Richard's Badger, which I appreciate that, Randall, because I know he is a well-known Badger that is that it could take a good Badger, KC4WZE. I think Bill's dozed off again.
I think he has too. But on, you know, the thing of it is, we're not even caught up yet. We have a lot more to talk about, and we have two topics for next time, plus a lot of the feedback that we didn't get to. But unfortunately, we have just really run out of time. I mean, we're just going too long at this point. So it's time to wrap it up. So Bill, wake up and tell us about Bill.
No, Bill's back because we heard the click.
Yeah, we heard the little click. So if you want to, you know, tell them where they can email you, or if you have a blog or anything you want to plug, or if you just want to tell us to go to hell, or excuse me, go to Badger, go ahead now.
Badger.
And there you have it. Okay, Richard, why don't you sum up?
I'll give him.
Chicago area is looking for an IT manager. I need a job. Thank you very much.
Well, where can they email you about
that? Chicago is looking for an IT manager. I need a job. So, like, call me first.
So where can they email those job opportunities to, Bill?
Yeah, the thousands of opportunities that are going to come pouring in now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can be mailed to Bill Gerz, B-I-L-L-G-R-Z, Golf Romeo Zulu at Comcast.net.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for being here, Bill. It's been a lot of fun, even though we put you to sleep there about halfway through.
No, I was too busy dealing with the Badgers. I was wide awake.
Yes, Bill. Thank you.
Okay. Well,
my
you
pleasure.
Can.
Good night, guys.
And I don't even know what the hell an IT manager does. But I'm Richard, KB5JBV, down here in the basement of the Bigfoot Tipping, the International Bigfoot Tipping Society in Omagosh, Wisconsin. And if you want to get in contact with me, you can send me an email at KB5JBV@gmail.com. KB5JBV@gmail.com. Or follow me on Twitter, Facebook, just about anything where people gather and congregate. I have some kind of account over there, whether I like it or not. I can tell by the undeleted spam in my mailbox. So, let's see what else. Oh, yes, go on over to LHSpodcast.info, LHSpodcast.info, and check out what's going on with Linux in the Ham Shack. I just would like you to know that this show was brought to you by the International Society for the Preservation of Badgers and BurtAndErnie.com. The International Society for the Preservation of Badgers, BurtAndErnie.com. Take it away, Russ.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is Russ. You can find me on the various social networks out on the internet using J.R. Woodman. I'm also K5TUX at 73s.org. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. You can leave us feedback on the website. You can send email to info@lhspodcast.info. You can also leave voicemail at 888-455-0305 or at 417-200-4811. And we'll play your feedback on the air and respond to it unless you tell us not to. Make sure to check out the live streaming on the website. It's on the right-hand column, LHS Up All Night, where you can hear unedited and explicit versions of the podcast before I get my red pen out and start deleting stuff. Sign up for the mailing list. Go to http://lists.bluecows.com/mailman/listinfo. And I believe I'll put a link to that somewhere on the website. But you go there and sign up for the Linux or the LHS podcast mailing list. And it'll be low traffic, but we'll just send you information about events that we're going to be at, updates on the website, updates for the podcast, so on and so forth, and we'll try to keep spam down to a minimum. There will be no spam, but some people might consider email from us spam in general. Next time, we're going to talk about the Southeast Linux Fest and Field Day. We're going to do the drawing from the Southeast Linux Fest for everybody who entered there. And we want to thank Bill for showing up on the podcast, K9WKA. Make sure to send any IT opportunities you have his way in the Chicago area specifically. And once again, I would like to thank Dave from Gamma Leonis for providing us with the intro and outro music, which I don't do enough, and for the LHS promo he did a few months back. That has been showing up on various other podcasts. So thanks to everybody. Thanks for listening. It's just about time to wind this thing down. Thanks for putting up with this extremely long, extremely ridiculous version of the podcast. And Richard's going to take us home. This is Russ from Between the Peaks in the Pine Forest of North Central Arkansas.
And we will see y'all next time. The secret word is platypus.